being dragged up, kidnapped when I was a kid, bullied. I always knew that I was different and that I was going to reach levels that others wouldn't.
Lee Davis, discharged from the military with a rare brain disorder, now making his mark on the ultra running scene.
Then when I went to Iraq, I banged my face in the truck. I started getting like electric shocks in my face. I was on a flight home that night, having emergency surgery in Headley Court. Got diagnosed with trigeminal neuralgia. They call it a suicide disease, so 26% of people commit suicide because they can't handle the pain. But if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at will change. I'm meant for a bigger purpose, right? And when I started ultra running, I knew that I was going to be at the top.
Welcome to the Rockman Podcast, the podcast for those with a deep desire to test and further their limits and live healthier lives with mental fortitude. Hear inspirational stories and get lessons in resilience from those who have conquered the world's toughest challenges in running, adventure, and life. I'm Terry Rosman, Rockman founder, and today we're exploring the mental and physical challenges faced by military personnel, how to persevere despite physical limitations, the role of challenges in managing mental health, and strategies for overcoming obstacles during long-distance runs. If you want to stay up to date with new podcast releases and help this channel grow, be sure to hit the subscribe button below. And if you take any value from this podcast, we'd appreciate your support in spreading the word. You can help us reach more people by giving us the thumbs up, leaving us a comment, or sharing it with a friend. Thank you. And remember, this podcast is brought to you by Rockman, the ultimate weekly running challenge platform. Test and further the limits of your physical and mental resilience around your everyday life all year round against weekly running challenges inspired by the world's most infamous tests. There's no fixed schedules, no equipment required, no far-off travel, no extortionate entry fees, and no excuses. All you need is a pair of running shoes and to remember where you live. So if you're feeling trapped in the cycle of comfort, risking the loss of your true potential, Rockman is the answer for you. You can get started straight away for free by clicking the link in the show notes below. Now, after 20 years in the British Army, enduring tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, our guest faced a new battle, a rare brain condition. But instead of surrendering, he turned to ultra-marathon running, finding solace and purpose in the relentless pursuit of physical challenges. From battling depression to setting records and winning races, his journey is one of triumph over adversity. Now he's set his sights on even greater challenges, including marathons in every UK city and the Ultra Trail de Mont Blanc Top 10. Join us as we unravel the extraordinary journey of this remarkable individual whose unwavering spirit serves an inspiration to us all. Welcome, Lee Davis.
Thanks, Terry. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. How was that intro? Was that good enough?
Yeah, you killed that, mate.
I put a lot of time and effort into
that.
Yeah,
you absolutely killed that. That would have taken me about 400 takes.
Yeah, well, it took me a fair few takes, but the listeners won't know that because it'll be edited together seamlessly.
Yes.
Seamlessly. Now, Lee, I gave you a bit of introduction there, but maybe I gave it a disservice. Could you start off with giving us just a really short background of who you are and sort of what you do right now?
So my name is Lee Davis. I'm a 39-year-old ultra runner from the Valleys in South Wales, and I've recently finished 20 years in the British Army, medically discharged with a rare brain condition.
Fab. I've got a bone to pick with you, actually, first.
Yeah.
Ten a van.
Yeah.
I heard you did it in a disgusting time of 10 hours. You actually won the race. No, I did it, was it a year ago now? Well, maybe 2 years ago. Jeez. So for people that don't know, 10 a van is where you have to summit, ascent and descend Penavan, the highest point of southern Britain, 10 times within 24 hours. Now, I did it in 23 and a half hours.
Yes.
You did it in 10 hours. How the hell did you manage that?
So, it's a battle of attrition, really. And I've spent so much of my career in Brecon on UK Special Forces selection and just training for promotion courses, that Penavan to me was just a run. So I was like, right, how can I break it down? I know if I'm in a long race, let's say I'm running 100 miles or a stage run, if I stop for too long, it's game over. My muscles will think then that the race is done and that the endorphins that are keeping you going, that your body thinks you're running, if you stop for too long, it's a recipe for disaster for me. So the reason I've done it so fast is because I didn't stop at all. I stopped for 2 15-minute breaks to change my socks and use the gentleman's. But apart from that, I didn't stop. I used the uphills to refeed, eating crisps, drinking the Red Amblins, as I call it, Coca-Cola, and taking on gels. And then I run where I could and then made sure I run all the way down. So the reason that it was 10 hours is I didn't stop at all. I didn't want to give my body the chance to think that it was done.
Yeah, it's a bloody tough challenge. Well, I will say this. When we did it, we didn't do it with the race. Yeah. We did it on our own and we did it in the middle of winter.
That must have been even worse.
Oh, it was terrible. It was in the middle of February. Snow, ice, sideways rain, hail, the temperatures as well. It was cold, wind chills of minus 11. So it was really bad.
Yeah.
And I was the only person that brought crampons as well. So as you can manage, it's that last sort of summit up to the actual peak. It's usually covered in ice. So you had all the boys slipping everywhere. Apart from me, I had my crampons. I was all right. But it was tough. The way we planned it, we were like, right, let's get five out of the way, hit halfway, then we'll have like an hour, we'll have some food, a proper sit down, and then we'll do three and then have a sit down and then two and then one. And then you do it and that sort of goes out the window from the start, because I think once we hit four ascents, we were done.
Yeah.
We were spent. It's surprising how it takes it out of you. I can't believe how you just kept going.
Yeah, it's the downhill. I did have a dip at like, I think it was the seventh ascent. I could feel my energy levels really dropping because, what are you, 7 hours? I was 7 hours in then. I could feel my energy levels dropping. And that's where I was like, right, maybe I need a 15-minute break, go to the toilet and actually take on board more calories than what I have been doing. That was the first point where I was like, oof, this is biting. But downhill was worse. I was loving the uphills.
Yeah, I suppose you can go at your pace then,
I guess,
can't you? Like, it's sort of nice and slow in a way compared to the downhills, I guess.
Yeah, but the legs really took a battering on the down.
I bet.
But I don't know if you found, but after a couple of descents, you sort of found a pace that was comfortable. It wasn't too fast where your muscles would start hurting, and it wasn't too slow where you were walking. You found that pace where you're like, this is going to be my pace for the rest of the summit. It's this.
Yeah. I tell you, it's a bit of a head fuck as well, because perhaps you get to six, right?
Yeah.
And you think, oh, I've only got four left.
Yeah.
But those four, well, for me, they would have taken like 8 to 10 hours.
And the thing is, if you've done it as a solo event, when I'd done it, there were hundreds and hundreds of people, and the support was immense. Like, you're passing the same faces, having the same banter. But I can imagine if the weather's shit, you're on your own, that must have been grim. I wouldn't be doing that.
It was pretty grim. It was quite good. There was, I tell you what, you mentioned Special Forces training at the start. They were doing a fan dance on the second day. So we got to see all these people and sort of go up with them in the morning as well. So that was quite good to have sort of other people during a race, albeit not to do with ours, but that was quite good to see them suffer too with us.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the rest of your challenge CV as well. So, you know, you picked up sort of running and stuff later in life. But since then you've not only sort of taken in all these ultra events and challenges, you've been bringing back the silverware. You've been winning them. So what scalps have you managed to take?
That never really was the start, though, Ter. Like, I was thrown into it. I was always army fit anyway. So when I joined, my fitness in basic training was shocking. there was nothing of me, to be fair, but it was always something that I was conscious of. Like, I run like a 9:27 mile and a half, so which is like the entrance test for basic, and I run it twice at the start of training. I run a 9:27, and then when I finished, I'd run a 9:27 again. So when I got to battalion, I made a conscious effort of focusing on fitness, and it started to get noticed. And within a year, I was scouted for my PTI course. My time had dropped from 9:28 to 7 minutes something.
Jesus, and then, that's a big difference.
Yeah, massive, huge. So you're talking like 4 minutes 35, maybe 4 minutes 40 for a mile. Then, because of my fitness, and I sort of got asked to go to the Comrades Marathon. So I wondered if I've got the medal. So the Comrades,
I can hear all that clacking, clanking of the metal. There's lots of medals there.
Yeah, the Comrades is a 56 ultramarathon. It's the biggest ultramarathon in the world. It's called the Ultimate Human Race. And it's over the Drakensberg Mountains in South Africa from St. Peter's Maritzburg to Durban. And they do alternate years. So they do up and a down. I'll tell you now, and your fans watching, just because it says down doesn't mean it's easier than the up. And that was my first experience of ultra running. I had to do a marathon to qualify. I'd never done a marathon before. And when I say I led out like Kipchoge, I led out like Kipchoge. I was army fit, but technically that meant I was good up to 10 miles. So I led out at like a 2:40 marathon pace. And I ended up walking the last 5 miles and just scraping the 4 hour qualifying time for the race. So when we talk about ultramarathons, I was never competitive. I was always, and then I'd done a couple of other ones where I was like middle of the pack. It was only 2019 that I started getting fed up of putting the same training block together and just falling short of the front of the pack. I always knew that I had the mental toughness to be with these guys at the front, but I was always falling short there with cramps and like just body issues. And I remember a specific race where I was like, I've had a fucking tit full of this. It was the Celtic Ultra, and from run, walk, crawl from my Abernagoid up over to Aberdare, and I finished 20th, and I was sick to death. So I started looking at my nutrition, and I started taking Tailwind. And then
it's Tailwind.
Yeah, it's a carb what's drink, that? Right? So essentially, yeah. It's a powdered drink where you pour. So your body needs like 60 grams, let's say, of carbs every hour. Pour it into your drink, and you just drink it like water, like a squash. Mm-hmm. I'm not shitting you when I say, from going, I finished like 15th three times in a row in an ultra. I'd done a sub 3 marathon at this point. I'd finished second in the North Somerset Marathon Championships, but I always fell short on the ultras. I'd started taking Tailwind, and before you know it, I'd won and set the course record on the Vaughan from Puthcawl to Penarth. And it, all I can put it down to, my training didn't change, was the Tailwind. And that just sparked since then, as you can see there. It's just been podium after podium.
Where did you get the idea for this Tailwind? Was it recommendation? Was it research?
It was not. So the ultra running community is quite niche and quite small. And one of the lads was running the run, walk, crawl 100 miler. And he, asked me if I'd pace him. So I paced him for like 20, 23 or 24 miles. But at the time, he was being sponsored, let's say, or supported by Tailwind Wales. I'd never heard of them. So when I'd done this pacing for him, I took this Tailwind and I was like, oh, this sits all right in my stomach. And I could feel it is weird because the years of running ultras before with not taking anything nutrition, just eating at the aid station as much as you can literally feel the energy. It's that wild because I'd been doing the wrong way, or let's say, for years before. When I started taking Tailwind, I could feel the hit of energy after I drank it. I was like, fucking hell, this is a game changer.
Is it legal?
It's Tailwind, it's a calm drink. Yeah. It's not even any so you can get like caffeinated ones, but I tend to keep them for the latter end of the race. But you can get like a Naked, which is no flavour at all. And it's a carbed drink. And there's loads of different flavours, but yeah, I still haven't managed to pick up a sponsor from Tailwind yet, despite, come on, Tailwind.
You've mentioned them about 20 times there, so if they don't do it now, it's crazy, isn't it? So basically, it sounds like your body was craving this source of energy, and as soon as you gave it to it, it's like, right, now we can perform.
Yeah, it was like that.
From doing running myself and stuff, and endurance, because you always hear about supplements, and there's so many supplements on the market that are completely useless to the average bloke.
Yeah.
What's the word? BCAAs.
Yeah.
Like, to the average bloke, something like that is, you're talking incremental percentages there that is going to help. For the average bloke, they've got other things to worry about.
Exactly, yeah. But just sort your diet out.
Once I got into the endurance sport, I realized, oh, wow. Supplements actually work. You need them. You need your gels, you need your nutrition, you need your hydration and stuff like that, because it's a big difference.
Yeah.
Have you ever bonked before?
Oh,
bonking?
Hard. There was Spain de France. So I run from Spain to France, right? The stage event, 135 kilometers. And, about six of us went out from the army up in Catrick, and the second day was 55 kilometers, but there's no roads, all coastal path. And I remember about 6 hours in being sat on the side of some mountain thinking, what the fuck is going on here? My eyes were going all blurry. I was like, oh, I'm in trouble here, because I'd run out of water. I was so hot. But like I just said, I didn't have a clue to it. I did not have a clue about the body's needs when running an ultramarathon and the requirements of the energy that you expend. I had no clue. I was just thinking, I'm fit, I can run.
Yeah.
Nope.
It can undermine everything. It can undermine all that months and weeks of training just by not managing your hydration and your nutrition correctly. I remember I did it on a bike ride. I cycled all the way to, I think, where did I go? Caerphilly and around like that. It was training for the Velofon in Cardiff. And I took one bottle of water and I was out for like 6 hours. And that had gone after an hour. And I ended up having to pull over and lying down on the grass in the middle of Caerphilly and getting my missus to come pick me up in the car. And then I had to go, when I got home, I was sat in the shower naked with the cold water, I think it was, just dripping all over me. It gets you in a bad way. It's serious stuff.
Yeah.
You know, people can get some really dodgy stuff, issues out of it. You haven't had anything worse than that? Any sort of big injuries or upsets from?
No, not from any nutrition sort of things. A friend of mine that is a very accomplished runner. He's won Snowdon 100, won Wild Horse 200, won Thames Path. He had a thing where he drank too much water.
The opposite way then?
Yeah. The name of it will come back to me, but essentially he'd drunk too much water, which had diluted all his body salts. He nearly fucking died.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, the knowledge of this, right, is I hadn't known about it until this happened to Ben. And I was like, what? You drank too much water on Ultramarathon and nearly died. Like, the doctors told him he'll never run again. He's out trying to get back to running again. But I think, tell you who else had it, was Rhys Jenkins.
Hmm.
I'll have to get the name of it.
Was that on his Badwater race?
Yes. I'll get the name of it now because otherwise I'm not doing it justice.
It's not Rhabdo, is it?
Rhabdomyolysis,
yeah.
Or whatever it is.
Yeah, is that something to do with the kidneys?
Rhabdo, yeah. I think so, yeah. So, yeah, basically, he diluted all his body's salts and body's just gone, nope, shut down.
Yeah, it's just proper serious stuff.
Yeah, so it's really scary, yeah.
I mean, you're not a stranger to your fair share of proper injuries and sort of physical ailments as well, which we'll go into. But before that, in a previous life, you were a military serviceman. How many years were you in that, and sort of how did it prepare you, maybe set you up for your later life of this ultra-running athlete?
So I joined when I was 16 initially. I was sold a lie.
Really?
Yeah, when I left school, I wanted to be an engineer in the RAF. And when I joined, I was pushed into the Royal Electrical Mechanical Engineers. And whilst it sounds fancy, it was terrible. So I joined when I was 16, got out when I was 17. And then I rejoined just after the Iraq War kicked off at 19. And then my first deployment was straight out to Iraq, Telic 6. So two subsequent tours of Iraq, Afghanistan, and then Okhrabit, which is on the Russian border, in 2017, basically as a show of force, so that Putin didn't make any moves. And I've had three facial reconstruction operations. So before I joined the army, I had like a disalignment in my face, and I had an operation, everything all fine, all singing and dancing. Then when I went to Iraq, I banged my face in the truck. And I hadn't said anything about it. I just kept it quiet. But my sergeant major was like, I was Lee Reese back then. So he's like, you're known as his surname. He's like, Reese, what's wrong with your face? I was like, I don't know, sir. He said, what's wrong with your face? I said, oh, I banged it in a warrior a couple of weeks ago. He's like, you need to go to a med center. So I went to the med center in Iraq. I was on a flight home that night, having emergency surgery in Headley Court, which is like where all injured soldiers go. So that was my second operation. And then in 2014, I had an operation whereby they cut the jawline, but cut the nerve. So this side of my face is permanently dead. So when you go to a dentist and have your tooth out, and you have the injection, that's why my face is like permanent. So sometimes you hear me over-pronunciate my P's and my F's. So I had to have speech therapy to speak again. About, what are we on now, 2024? In 2021, I started getting like electric shocks in my face, like from the point of where my face is numb. And I was thinking, oh, maybe it's the nerve trying to repair itself, because the doctor said after 2 years, it's completely dead. But it was just constant. So I kept with it. And the attacks kept getting worse. So I went to the doctor. As I said, look, I can't concentrate. I was a sergeant at the time. I had a load of responsibility and like live firing, people's promotion courses and things like that. I was like, if I can't concentrate, then I'm gonna fuck up. So I need to find out what's wrong. And it just kept getting worse. And it was bringing me to my knees. I was having like 30, 40 attacks a day, like an electric bolt. Exactly like an electric shock from my face up through my eye into my brain. And I could feel the exact path that it was taking. So I went to the doctors and I said, the army doctors, and I said, look, I can't cope. I said, I need to see somebody because I'm not sure what's going on here. Well, I got sent home in 2021 And then ensued a long battle with diagnosis, medication, to trying to identify what the problem was with my brain. So I got sent to London on a couple of occasions to have MRIs and CAT scans and the like. But all the while, I was on 1,600 milligrams of carbamazepine. So I was zombified. Like, literally, I could not do anything. I couldn't speak properly. I just about buttered a bit of toast. It was dark times because I'd lost my career. I knew that I was going to get medically discharged. I wasn't running. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. Eventually, I got diagnosed with a condition called trigeminal neuralgia. And that's a they call it a suicide disease. So 26% of people kill themselves or commit suicide because they can't handle the pain. That and a mix of the medication, I suppose. And I ended up going through therapy because of the medication and my condition, I just couldn't see a way out there. Like, I was so stuck in a rut where this is my life now. Everything's gone. I'm not running anymore. My career's gone. I had to go through therapy. So I went through counseling online. And whilst it was wishy-washy at the start and doing all the grounding and stuff like that, stuff that felt really uncomfortable to me, the biggest thing to come from therapy was it's my choice. So yes, I'm in this situation, but if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at will change. So yeah, I was in a shit situation. Yeah, I was on medication. Yeah, I was having these attacks. But I've got the choice to get up and actually attack the day. So after therapy, I stopped the medication completely. Completely stopped it. I don't even care that the army advised that I had to take it. I fucking stopped it. It was turning me into somebody that I wasn't.
I was going to say, sorry, what medication was this? Was this for your mental state, or was this?
No,
for
I was on medication. But this is the key thing, right? Is I'd never had any mental health issues at all. No depression, no anxiety, nothing. Because of my condition and it being nerve related, all the medication I was taking was a type of antidepressant because it's a nerve suppressant. And God knows how, but from having no mental health issues, starting to take mental health issues, I went fucking batshit crazy. Literally.
Really?
I could not do anything. I'd get up from bed knowing I'd have to go and do something. I'd just be like, ah, fuck it. I'm not doing it. Literally, it turned me into a different person. So from somebody having no mental health problems, taking these painkillers put me into a hole. So I've heard other people talking about medication, and I don't want to get into the politics of it. I'm not taking them because I don't. Big Pharma as a business in my eyes, and yes, I've got a condition, but I'm managing it now without painkillers because I've had pain therapy. I've been to London, and whilst my pain threshold is through the roof, I will never fucking touch another med in my life.
Yeah, is it? And these are painkillers now that you've sworn off, like,
yeah. So like mirtazapine, carbamazepine, amitriptyline, duloxetine. There's so many medications that I trialed that I was like, these ain't working. They're making me feel shit. They're making me feel worse. Putting on weight, sweating. There's so many I tried that I was just like, nah, I'm not taking anymore.
How many years were you taking this for? And can you pinpoint a moment of when you sort of gone, enough is enough?
Yeah, so I finished therapy November 22. I finished therapy November 22, I think it was.
So we're not talking long ago.
No.
You know, this is all fairly recent.
Yeah, well, I only got discharged June last year, officially. Although I was home.
Really?
Yeah, although I was home for over 2 years because they couldn't identify. So there was a case of like a misdiagnosis, right? So I got diagnosed with trigeminal neuralgia. Then another specialist said, "Oh no, it's SUNA, which is like another type of nerve condition." Then there were no, he's showing clear signs of trigeminal neuralgia. SUNA, short-lasting unilateral neurological attacks, usually has like a physical tell, so like swelling in the eye or a red eye or runny eye. And because I'd highlighted to the fact when I went for a consultation with one of the doctors that once when I was having an attack that my eye was running a bit, they put me into the bracket of SUNA, when the other consultant that I seen was like, "Yeah, but you're having 40 a day, Lee, just because you've had one time where your eye was running and puffy doesn't put you into the category of SUNA." So there's still a battle now, because the specialists in London have said that it's SUNA, and the specialists in Swindon believe it's trigeminal neuralgia. Now, I'm on the trigeminal neuralgia fence because my symptoms don't correlate to SUNA, because SUNA has a physical tell, like patch. I've got a different condition anyway, Frey syndrome, but it has like a physical tell, but mine don't. It's all invisible.
Mm. Do they have any idea of how this was caused? Was this caused by the bang on the head, or was it caused by the cutting of the nerve, or is it just a combination of everything?
Well, this is where it's going to be a little bit passing blame. So I deeply believe that it's because of my last medical operation. Now, there's medical neglect here as well, because they fucked up on the operation by leaving stuff in my ear. My face swole up. But with it being the army, they don't want the two to correlate. Because money. Yeah. Because if that is the case, then somebody can be held accountable. But yeah, it's a big battle that's ongoing at the moment with solicitors and Armed Forces Compensation Scheme, because they're delinking both of them. And I'm like, everything that's happening is in the point of where I've had surgery. Everything. Mm-hmm. Like the attacks start where my numbness stops. I'm like, it doesn't take a genius to work out that these two are linked. But yeah, I don't think they'll ever put two and two together, because then somebody's liable, so it'll mean compensation, but then they're just not going to do that.
Yeah, they're going to avoid that like the plague. You know, you said that you fell into sort of like this deep depression, you know, the loss of your military career, the medication you're on, the sort of the lack of purpose and being able to do anything. But then you said that you found the strength to go, "I'm not going to sit here and just like wallow in my own pity. I'm going to do something about it." Where did you find the courage from that? Is that something that happened over time, or was it the fact that you'd suffered enough and you wanted to do something about, actively do something about
so
it?
So it's sort of compressed there, right? It's like you don't realize how tough you are, right, until you have to be tough. Now, the last thing I wanted to do when I was feeling like shit was tell someone. And you see it preached all the time, right? It's okay not to be okay, talk, blah, blah, blah. I am telling you, for someone that's been in the depths, the last thing I wanted to do, not even my wife, was tell someone that I was hurting. And when you get up in the morning, the only way I can explain it is like being hit, right? Let's say you got a nail and you get up in the morning and you hit it, and then the next day you hit it some more. So I wake up every day and I'm being hit with these feelings of, you said it exactly there, purpose. My purpose had gone. When you take away a man's purpose, Where is he going? What does he have left? So he's constant waking up. I still no closer to diagnosis. I still haven't got the energy to go for a run. Compiled day after day after day. And then you start thinking, how can I get out of this? Like, there's only so much that you can load on top of me where I start, where there needs to be a point where I was like, right, I need to stop being this way. I need to actually make change. But just because you think it doesn't mean it happens. You're still getting pounded every single day. But every day, this want or need to get better is getting stronger. So you're still getting pounded, but it's getting stronger and stronger. And eventually, I got to a point where I was like, nah, fuck this. Nah, it's not happening. And I can't exactly pinpoint where it was, but I just remember the fact that for months I'd just been isolating and just letting it compound on top. And then eventually the feelings of, no, maybe I can get better. Maybe I can do something. And then what happened was, in my head, I'm going to show myself that I'm not fucking weak anymore, that I am still capable, that I am still competent, and that I can still do hard things. So that was a point where I was like, I'm going to book a race. In 6 months' time, I'm going to book a race. So I finished the therapy and stuff, and I was like, I'm going to book a race. And when I was training for it, in my head, now, not egotistically, but I was like, I'm going to win. There's nobody going to beat me. I said, from what I've come through, I need to prove to myself that I have still got life ahead of me. As it happened, Reese, the race director, phoned me. And I don't know where he came from, Ter. But he said, how are you feeling? I'd never met him or never spoke to him before. And I was like, yeah, I'm on the path to goodness. I said, what's the course record? I don't even know where this had come from. And he said, whatever. I was like, I'm going to break it. And he went, oh, confidence. He said, I'll get my teams out early. Well, I went and broke it. And he said, oh, you back up. So this was this. So this, I've done a video. I've got a YouTube channel purposely to show that the benefits of people running and getting into outdoor activity far outweigh medication. And me living with a rare brain condition, having attacks 30 to 40 times a day. We all put masks on, yeah? It's a given in life. No matter what situation you're in, we put masks on. But it's about how you are when you put those masks on and making sure you put the right masks on. Because you could be putting a mask on and it'd be the completely wrong one. If you're going to put a mask on, put a fucking champion mask on. Because if you don't, you're selling yourself short. So for me, it's all about mindset. Like, it's and affirmation and all that kind of stuff. Okay, The Secret and all that. It's fucking true. It works. Like, if you change the way you look at things, then you can pull yourself out of any hole. Yes, it might take a while. Yes, you might not want to. But there's only so much shit a man can take before he decides to change.
I've always said that. I've always said suffering is the catalyst, I believe, to change. I think that's why you get a lot of people that have sort of faced these life traumas that end up going into ultra endurance events.
Yeah.
I think because they've faced so much crap, they've come to the point where they say no more.
Yeah.
Personally, it happened to me. I found myself stuck in a sort of a bit of a rut of drinking, eating crap, recreational drugs,
yeah.
Living the sort of nihilistic lifestyle, and it creeps up on you. And it got to the point where, you know, I was obese, you know, unfit,
yeah.
Greasy, where I think you know, and that I've always said this, I always knew what to do. I always knew I didn't like where I was, and I always knew what I had to do, but it's sort of like you always choose the easy path. Because that's easy.
Yeah.
the hard path is actually doing something, but it does come to a point where you've put up with it for enough now. Enough is enough. Yeah. And it likes to spark up you, yeah. up your ass, you know? It puts the fire in your belly to go out and attack things. That's not to, but the what people need to take from this is that if you can nip that in the bud before you get to that point,
yeah.
the better. Yeah. The sooner you can take action.
The sooner you identify the fact that you need to make a change. And like you said, it's, the easy path will always be there. Like, just like, just get in bed and hit the snooze on your alarm. It will always be there. But the quicker they identify the fact that I need to make changes here. And often it's your social friendship group. Because like you just said, if you're going out and you're on the piss and you're taking recreational drugs, it's encouraged because of the people you surround yourself with. Mm-hmm. It's like, so then how do you break away from the norm? Like, I don't drink. I'm drunk for years. I am seen as the weird one that's stepped away from it all within my friendship group. But it's having the courage, like, dare to be different. Like, you don't have to conform to what society thinks that you should be or where you should be achieving or what job you should have or how much money you make or whatever. Like, dare to be different. Fuck what anybody else does. Just choose your own path.
That's my saying. I've got a saying.
Yeah.
It's fuck them.
Yeah.
It's fuck them.
Yes.
Look, the amount of people I see that take on what other people say, it's like, it's the limitation.
Yeah.
Limitations are put on them by other people's opinions.
Yeah.
And it's sad to see, like, because sometimes they'll never go and chase a dream that they've always wanted. They'll never, like, start a business idea or start a hobby or a class or a fitness class or something like that.
Yeah.
They won't do it because they're scared of, it's like this fear of judgment
yeah.
that's holding them back from their friends. I tell you what's funny, when I started to sort of turn my life around, and I truly believe it saved my life because doing challenges is what sort of gave me the purpose and the motivation to do it. But when I started to do it, it's by you taking action, it sort of holds up a mirror to the people that aren't, and they don't like that.
Yeah.
They don't like other people doing well. And that's why you've got to say, you've got to stick to that fuck them attitude.
Yeah.
Because they're going to bring you down. They're going to try and bring you down and stuff like that. Where did the ultramarathons come in then for you? Why an ultramarathon? Why a race? What made you identify that's sort of what was lacking in your life?
I'd always been into fitness and how do I put this without becoming across as... Right, so essentially, innately, I've always thought that I'm meant for a bigger purpose, right? Now, this is going to sound far-fetched, but I've always thought that from the being dragged up, kidnapped when I was a kid, bullied, I always knew that I was different. There was something different in my head. And I was going to reach levels that others wouldn't. And when I started ultra running, I knew that I was going to be at the top. And it didn't matter when. Like, I'm nearly 40 now. Injury and illness has been a factor. But mark my words when I tell you, I will be running the UTMB. So ultra running for me is about... A lot of, as you just spoke about there, right, with people that don't start because of others' opinions on them, a lot of people get comfortable in life. Now, I'm more than happy if you're content in life and you're happy, then all good for you. However, I hate the word comfortable. I think... We only get one life, right? So if you can't constantly push your limits of what you think you can achieve, then I think you're doing yourself a disservice. So ultra running for me is about finding those boundaries, smashing through them, grabbing all the good feelings from them to move to the next one to see if I can push the boundaries even further. And after time, right, a lot of people will put blocks on stuff and not do stuff because they're scared. Half the time, when you do stuff, you think, why the fuck was I scared about doing that? Because
half the time, most of the time.
Yeah.
Most
yeah,
of
fair
the time.
One, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, why the fuck did I put so much connotation about that being so hard when I've just smashed it? It's like, right, okay, if I've done that, what can I do next? Like, so for me, ultra running has always been, like, when I started, I wasn't very good, like I said earlier. But innately, then that sparked the fires. Like, oh, fuck, I'm no good at this. But I fucking love it. I love pushing myself. I love the everything about race day, the community, and like the build up, the training. And I was like, I want to make this my life. Like, this is something that needs to be my life, because if I love it this much, how can I then put that out on to other people? So for me, I'm although I'm 39, ultra marathon running is only just a start, really.
39 years young, I say.
Yeah.
39 years young. Same as me, actually. Same as me.
Are I'm you 39? Well. Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm 39.
Yes.
I know I look like a young pup. But like, so you say you want to make ultra running in your life, and it sounds to me that you've got this message that you're passionate about and you want to share with others. How are you doing that? You mentioned a YouTube channel as well.
Yeah, so I am quite active on social media in regards to Instagram and YouTube. And the whole reason behind it is because I set up a page called Vet I Run, so it's a play on words for veteran, trying to encourage, initially it was veteran, so I've lost more friends to suicide than what I have in war, and that is fucking heartbreaking. But having come through everything that I've come through, I know that exercise is better than medication. Fucking fact. Exercise is better than medication. So if I know that, and it does that for me, I want to try and shout from the rooftops, look, listen, I know you're feeling shit, but go for a walk. Get outside. So if I can...
They'll lock you up. Then. Who's this nutter?
I know, yeah.
Shout
it. Just walking around with a big sign, like, yeah. If you feel shit, go for a walk.
Yeah.
But, I think that, like, if I can reach, I don't know, let's say 10,000 people watch a video, if 1% of them go, do you know what, I'm feeling a bit shit this morning, I'm going to go and hit my 10,000 steps or whatever mandatory goal they've got, then it's, I'll keep doing it, because I look up where I was now in 2021, 2022, decimate with no prospect in my brain, but it's there. It's all there for you. All you have to do is just change the way you look at fucking things.
Yeah. So it goes back to what we were saying a minute ago, that, you know, people are too quick to take medication these days rather than go and do exercise. It's because that's the easy thing to do. That's so easy to pop a pill rather than actually put your trainers on and get out for a run. And I think sometimes the size of the task in people's heads it's intimidating. It can sort of demotivate them to actually go out and do it. But also on the other end, I'm going to imagine with veterans is that they're very proud people. They were at the pinnacle of fitness and now they've got to go for a walk. And maybe they feel that's almost like beneath them and they can't do it. But people just need to sort of drop the ego and just start. And it's the same with my friends around me. I think a lot of them, they've got, they still think they're 18, you know, and going down the gym and all this. And they won't go out and they don't want to be humbled on these runs. They don't want to be shown up. There is a fear of failure. But you've got to start.
What I found, right, and especially over the past 18 months, is people will justify the fact that for the reasons that they're not doing it. Like, so let's say I've got a couple of friends that are on medication for antidepressants. Now, I won't name any names, but I've had conversations and family members where I've had conversations where I've tried to highlight the fact that these tablets are only making them worse. But what they tend to do then is they will justify the fact that, oh no, but the doctor said that if I come off taking them, then I'll feel worse. So there's a negative connotation on this straight away, because somebody in a profession has told them if they stop taking them, then they're going to feel worse, maybe worse than what they were. And what happens there is it reinforces the need for them. So by me saying to them, look, you don't need to take them, that's having like a negative effect. It's reinforcing, because what they're doing then is justifying that the doctors told them. So by me telling them that it doesn't work, they're just in their head, it's reinforcing the fact that they need to be on them. And I've seen that in a family member, and I'm just like, I'm pulling my hair out. I'm like, just literally, I know you suffer with low mood, and there is obviously science behind the fact that you are struggling with low mood and stuff. But I'm telling you now, maybe just try going for a walk, go for a bike ride, get outdoors. And how do you quantify like the feelings that you're going to get? It's like, for me, saying to someone, you don't need to do it because you're going to feel this amount of emotions. It's like, how do I then quantify to them? Say, look, I can never really put it into words. So they tend to just not do it. Which is sad, because of, as you said, they'll just take the easy option in regards to, I'll just take another tablet. I'm feeling a little bit low. I'll take another tablet rather than put the trainers on and going out for a walk.
Exactly. I feel like I do need to say that a bit of a disclaimer is that there are obviously cases where medication is needed, but the cases that I see, people are going straight to the medication before they're putting in these pillars of health, before they're even tackling them. Good sleep, good nutrition, regular exercise routine, before they're even sorting that out.
It should be a prerequisite. It should be a prerequisite.
The doctor should say.
Doctors, if you were going to a doctor with low mood, right, the doctor should say to you, are you eating your daily intake of calories? Are you getting your daily amounted of steps? Are you getting exercise? Are you getting sleep? If you're being truthful, which 100% of us ain't, if a doctor was to ask me those questions, I know for a fact I'd lie on every fucking one of them.
You just want the meds.
Yeah, but if you're being truthful and you actually sat down and go, do you know what? I'm not getting outside. I'm only getting 4 hours sleep. Go away, work on that before you fucking take the meds. Before you, if you've gone away and you've gone, exercise isn't working, 8 hours sleep isn't working, my diet and nutrition's on point, that isn't working, fucking go to doctors. Get your antidepressant, see if that works. But be honest with yourself, because I know and you know, if you went to doctors and they asked me those questions, and I've had it before, like in army medicals, they've asked me those questions, and I'm like, yep. You get 8 hours sleep a day? Yep. Yeah. Do I fuck?
Of course I do. Yeah. Of course I do.
But you need to be honest with yourself.
Lee, looking ahead to the future now, what we got? What can we expect?
Right. So 12 weeks ago today, I broke my back.
Right. We're wrapping it up now. And you chucked that bombshell in. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So the near future for me is purely going to be a return, recovery, return to fitness. I last run a sub 3 hour marathon. I've only done 3 marathons official. One to qualify for Comrades. First attempt at sub 3, where I run 3:01, and then and then I run sub 3:257. So I haven't run that was 2020. So on my return, I've got this lofty goal. Now, I'd seen Josh something on Insta, do a marathon in every city in the UK, consecutive. I don't have that fortune that I can do it consecutive, because I work and I want to take my wife and my daughter to these cities in the UK. The next thing for me would be to recover. I'm on a 16-week marathon plan, and I'm going to start the marathon in every city in the UK on the 21st of July. By the end of this year, I want to run in a, be back under that sub 3 hour. But as you said at the start, my ultimate goal is to set my stamp on the UTMB and finish top 10. And the whole reason around that is purely legacy. I want my daughter and her kids, when she has kids, to look at her granddad and go, despite having a brain condition, despite being medically discharged from the British Army, this guy still fought everything and come top 10 in the toughest race in the world. So I'm doing it for purely just as a guiding light. And whether it takes 5 years or whether it takes seven, that's going to be the ultimate goal.
Awesome. It's your opportunity to really put a stamp on the world. You know, that's a world stage that you'll be competing on. And like, there'd be no quibbles about sort of how good you are then at all, like how well you've done. I like it. It's setting the sights high. I like it.
Well, there's no point setting challenges that you know you can achieve.
No, it's not a challenge then.
No.
You can't call it a challenge.
No.
It has to be right outside your comfort zone. Where can people find you?
So on YouTube and Instagram, it's Lee Runs Ultras. I do have another platform that's purely for coaching, it's Pursue Purpose. And that's pursuepurpose.co.uk and on Instagram as well. But my biggest social media thing is Lee Runs Ultras. You can find me on Insta, Facebook, and YouTube.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for your time today, Lee.
Cheers for having
me on,
mate.
Appreciate it. Yeah, it was good laugh. Good laugh.
Yeah.
And I know we'll catch up soon. And good luck with your pursuit for the ultra.
Yes. Thanks, buddy.
I'll catch you soon. No worries. Ta-da. Bye.
Ta-da.
Remember, this podcast is brought to you by Rockman, the ultimate running challenge platform. At Rockman, we offer free weekly running challenges inspired by the world's most infamous fitness tests to test your limits and help you build your mental resilience around your everyday life without restriction. There's no fixed schedules, there's no far-off travel, there's no extortionate entry fees. All you need is a pair of running shoes and to remember where you live. So if you're craving a different kind of challenge, or if you're suffering the strain of a lack of time and motivation, Rockman is the answer for you. You can get started right now for free by clicking the link in the show notes below.